Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. Critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There was only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
I can't believe this. I think it's back-to-back nice Saturdays. This is...
What's going on?
Okay, good.
I mean, this morning, outside, it's glorious.
Even though it said 47 degrees, put it this way. If you haven't been outside yet this morning, or you were out last night and you'll know what I'm talking about, it feels warmer right now at 47 degrees, or at least it was a few minutes ago in Boston, than it did last night when it was 62. I'd rather play golf in this morning's 47 degrees than be finishing up last night when it was 62 degrees and I was freezing my ass off. So, there you go. So hopefully you're going to have a chance to play today. Hopefully you're going to have a chance to enjoy the nice weather. My name is Hardy. Sports Hub Golf Club with you here until 8 o'clock. Mike O'Brien taking care of the headlines for us this morning. Mason Sousa running things back in Dorchester as we get into what is now only the second little lull of the PGA. I don't want to call it the PGA Tour season, so we're going to call it the Major Championship season because of this new format, which I don't want to say failed because it's too early for that. I don't want to say that the shuffling of the major championships and the PGA Tour schedule has not worked out because it's too early to say that. However, what we have so far in the 2019 golf season is... I think a very, very obvious example of how the best intentions can be thrown off by the actual players. Now, do not get me wrong. I will not be taking anything away from Brooks Koepka today. Obviously, the PGA Championship was played last weekend. Brooks Koepka is your winner. This guy is unbelievable. He's absolutely unbelievable. He now has back-to-back. Just think about it in these terms, if nothing else. Right now, he has won and currently holds back-to-back titles in both the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship. Back-to-back major titles in two different majors. It's unthinkable. But when you think about it a little bit, and we'll talk about it a little bit more here this morning, you realize, oh, well, he is the latest and maybe the best of this latest crop of golfers who burst onto the scene, have enormous success early on, and now the question becomes, what happens next? We'll get to Brooks Koepka here in a couple of minutes. First, though, I want to talk about the tournament itself and the fact that because of the shuffling of the schedule this year. And I was surprised. A couple of people reached out to me and didn't realize, A, that the PGA Championship was happening in May, or B, and this was the more, I guess, common question that I got last week and in the days leading up to the PGA Championship last week. Was why did the PGA Tour do this? I thought everybody knew. So I will give you the 10-second version. Basically, they shuffled the whole schedule because they don't want to compete with football anymore. This is it. They want to be done with football before Labor Day. We used to have the FedEx Cup, as you well know, go well past Labor Day, as we would have the second of the events take place at TPC Boston, and what was the Deutsche Bank Championship became the Dell Technologies Championship, and it would move on to another tournament from there and finally wrap up at the championship, and somebody would win the $10 million. But then you're 3 weeks into September, and the PGA Tour found that nobody was paying attention because football had started. And even at the Dell Technologies, the players were more interested in their college football teams than they were sometimes in their golf, especially if they were, you know, a couple strokes over par and had no chance of winning the tournament. So in an effort to avoid any conflicts with the NFL, they moved the PGA Championship to May. And now essentially got one major every month. Got the Masters in April, going to have the PGA Championship in May. Just a couple of weeks, a few weeks from now, we're going to have the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach in June, and then the British Open in July. And it also avoids having to move the PGA Championship every 4 years or wonder if it's going to be affected by the Olympics. With golf being in the Olympics and, again, competition with that, you don't have to worry about that anymore. Okay. There are other benefits to it, too. With the PGA Championship being held in August, there are only certain golf courses in the country that could host it due to weather conditions. Couldn't have the PGA Championship a lot of courses in the South. It's just too bloody hot. Couldn't do it. A lot of courses didn't. And even if they were open and, you say to the players, fine, just, get out there and play anyway. It would the golf course conditions are not good enough in August in some of the hotter climates to really put forth the best effort that the PGA wants to for what is still the fourth of the four majors. They said, fine, you know what's an easier way of handling this? Move it to May. Everything good. Everything was set up for this to be just remarkably successful after Tiger won at the Masters. Like, oh my God, what a perfect setup for this first year of the new schedule. Tiger Woods wins the Masters, and then a month later we're going to have the PGA Championship at a municipal course at Bethpage Black and take away the whole stigma of the PGA Tour players being pampered, spoiled babies only playing country club courses, and it's going to be at a muni in New York, and Tiger won there before. This is great. One problem. We talked about it a little bit last weekend. Tiger missed the cut, which left us with a Tigerless field for Saturday and Sunday. Well, the ratings were in. The ratings were in a few days ago. The ratings are in now. This is not what the PGA was hoping for. They ended up with this is just for Sunday's final round of the PGA Championship, okay? So 5-6 days, whatever it was. All right, Sunday's final round had a 3.9 overnight rating, which was down 36% from the 6.1 that they posted not on Thursday when Tiger was out there playing, not on Friday when he went out and appeared to maybe still have a chance at being in this thing and making the cut. The final round of the PGA Championship did a 3.9 compared to last year's 6.1. Whoops. Same winner. This is not what they were expecting. Well, wait a second. You say, how is it that last year, Hardy, I thought nobody wanted to watch golf in August. I thought there were too many conflicts with the PGA Tour. I thought, how could it possibly post a 6.1 last year, the final round of the PGA Championship, and only a 3.9 this year? It's at Bethpage Black. Brooks Koepka's the same guy. Aren't people interested in seeing if he wins back-to-back? What's the difference? How could that possibly be? How did the ratings fall 36%? Oh, last year in the final round, Tiger Woods was in the hunt. Right up until the very end, he went. I hate to reduce it to the same thing week in and week out, month after month, year after year on this show, but unfortunately, a huge chunk of the audience reacts to this the same way guys like Scott Zolak do when he tells me, Hardy, is Tiger playing this weekend? Nope, not watching. That's it. That's it. So, I mean, there are a couple of bright spots. If you go back to 2017, yes, it did a better number. But it's still the third lowest after 2017 and 2008 for a final round of the PGA Championship going back to 1995, 24 years ago. And to tell you, who won in 2017, someone, well, that was Justin Thomas. And he's one of these guys that you look at and say, well, haven't we seen guys like Brooks Koepka before? Kind of. Justin Thomas is one of those guys. But this is not what the PGA was hoping for. So you look at the ratings, you look at what happened, and it is once again the Tiger factor. Now, for good news for golf, Tiger is going to play in next week's Memorial. This is the Jack Nicklaus event, Dublin, Ohio. Tiger has won this tournament five times. This is the one that he tries to make. And this is one of the tournaments that hasn't been upset by the reshuffling of the PGA Tour schedule. It's still going to be 2 weeks right before the U.S. Open. So, you know, this is the type of tune-up that these guys like. It's not the week before, but it's a big tournament. It's 2 weeks before a major. They get a chance to go out there, play against a strong field. It's in front of Jack Nicklaus. These guys still care. They want to win at Jack's tournament. Tiger, of course, idolizes Jack Nicklaus and still, you know, wants to win that tournament. So we can hope for a strong performance for Tiger only if you care about the ratings of PGA Tour golf. And if you're not a Tiger supporter or a Tiger fan, then you don't care either way. But once again, what's good for Tiger ends up being good for the game. So that'll be happening next week at the Memorial. Now, like I said, this is nothing against Brooks Koepka, because I am continuing to be blown away by this guy, as I have been by other players in recent years who come onto this scene and get wins seemingly immediately. You know, and I think Jordan Spieth is probably the closest example. I mean, we have to go back 4 years now, but he won the Masters in 2015 and the U.S. Open, finished second at the PGA Championship. So he won back-to-back majors in 2015. Oh, excuse me, back-to-back-to-back. If you count the Open Championship, he's got three of the four career Grand Slam, all right? Masters and U.S. Open in 2015. He didn't win the British until 2017, excuse me. But he took second at the PGA Championship. So here he was in that year, in 2015, essentially looking like that Brooks Koepka, like Brooks Koepka does now. A PGA Tour Player of the Year in 2015. Of course, he was as the FedEx Cup champion that year, if you want to count that toward anything, which, hey, count the $10 million if you don't count anything else. Won the Varden Trophy, the Byron Nelson Award, everything. 2015, Jordan Spieth was what Brooks Koepka is now, maybe to a somewhat lesser degree. He didn't have the back-to-backs from 1 year to the next. He did win the Open Championship a couple years later and looked like he was probably, you know, finding his way back after his meltdown at the Masters in 16. However, Brian Wacker of Golf World says there are differences. And he wrote an entire column saying, here's what's separating Brooks Koepka from his peers. And he says the major championship run isn't over yet. I'm going to go through what Brian Wacker had to say about this and see if we agree with it all as we continue here. Oh, by the way, also this morning, we're going to pay a visit to the Cape Club of Sharon. Ken Elworthy is the general manager out there. You may have heard Stephen Daly. He's the head professional out there. He's doing some lessons with us here this year on the Sports Hub Golf Club, but I wanted to take a look at the club itself, talk a little bit about what's going on over there. As we do from year to year on this show, go to different golf courses, different clubs, both public and private, take a look, see what the facilities are like, give you an idea of what's out there. So we're going to do that later on this morning with Ken Elworthy. He's the general manager at the Cape Club of Sharon. So all that coming up here this morning on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
This is going to go poorly. Mason, Mike O'Brien, I may need some help on this. All right, welcome back to the Sports Hub Golf Club. This part is not going to go poorly. The Stanley Cup Final, of course, begins on Monday. Bruins, NHL, playing a free outdoor concert, or putting on a free outdoor concert and viewing party at Boston City Hall Plaza, excuse me, Monday night. That part is not going to go poorly. That's going to be awesome. It's presented locally by Connection. The event's going to open at 4:30, musical performances at 6 p.m. This is the part that's going to go poorly. And again, I may need your help here. I believe the performers, this is what I've heard, Lil Nas X. Am I correct? Is that the artist's name who sings the song Old Town Road? Hello? Any help here, fellas?
Yeah, maybe. I think you're right.
I thought that is Billy Ray Cyrus on that song too, like a version of that song?
No, yeah, that's absolutely right. Yep, Lil Nas X and Billy Ray Cyrus. That is confirmed. Yep.
Okay, I was terrified of mispronouncing Lil Nas X. All right, but I got it. Okay, good. I dig that Old Town Road song. I think it's great. I think everybody should be playing it. But neither here nor there. So this is the big party Monday night. It's going to open at 4:30. Musical performances starting at 6. And then you can stay and watch the Bruins-Blues game on video screens. And there's going to be food trucks. There's going to be beer, wine. BostonBruins.com/Stanley Cup Final Party. Okay? Once again, City Hall Plaza, Monday. BostonBruins.com/Stanley Cup Final Party. Final is singular, not plural. That's, you know, if you want to sound like a real hockey snob, walk around saying, oh, they're in the Stanley Cup Final. Don't say finals. I think it was Howie Sylvester who beat that out of me about, I don't know, 8 years ago, 9 years ago. Okay. All right, moving on. Back to Sports Hub Golf Club here. Brooks Koepka, your PGA Championship winner. Brian Wacker wrote a great column in Golf World saying, here's why Brooks is different and why it's not over. Because we have seen this before. Jordan Spieth is the best example, I think, who won the Masters and the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship. He finished second, all in 2015. So two major championship wins and a runner-up in 2015. 2 years later, he wins the British. And it looked like Jordan Spieth was going to take over the world. He has not. And he has had some, some just fallings off. He's had a couple of minor injuries to deal with. He's had some putting issues. He had, of course, his meltdown on the 12th hole at the Masters a few years back. But again, nothing, there hasn't been anything as catastrophic as like Ben Hogan in a car crash, you know, which he, by the way, came back from. Nothing like that. You could also compare him to Justin Thomas, who had an incredible breakout year in 2017. Justin Thomas, how soon we forget, won 5 PGA Tour events, including the PGA Championship, in 2017. Won the FedEx Cup that year. Came out of nowhere to become the number one player in the world, all within a span of months. So we've seen this recently in the last few years. Brooks Koepka, Brian Wacker says, though, is going to be different. Starting with Hank Haney, he talks with a bunch of different coaches and players, and he says, if you're going to build a golfer from the ground up, Hank Haney says, Brooks Koepka is the prototype. The prototype? Really? He said, no, he is physically built to withstand the test of golf and major championship now and for years to come. Okay. Well, tell me more. All right. So Brian Wacker talks with Coach Pete Cowan, who says muscle structure is massive to what he does. He has some of the best shoulders in the game. What? Huh? He said, nope, his big shoulders are the transmission on a finely tuned race car. It's what links the power to the wheels, and it's what drives his swing. Okay, I don't know if I'm just going to automatically say broad-shouldered means unbeatable at golf, but I will give him this. His length and accuracy off the tee are deadly. And, you know, being able to, you know, hit the ball a long way off the tee, this is nothing new. You know, this goes back not only to Tiger Woods, but to other long drivers of the golf ball. You can look at Greg Norman. You can look at Jack Nicklaus. You can look at guys throughout history who have been able to, you know, be long off the tee. And lest you think it's all about the accuracy, we talked about this last week with Stephen Daly, who's the head professional over at the Cape Club in Sharon. No. If you can bomb it 300-plus yards, and, you know, Koepka can hit it even, you know, a lot further than that, given the right conditions, it doesn't matter if you're in the rough, especially if you're strong enough, like he is, for an upright swing plane that you can use your speed and strength to get down into the rough. So if you hit it 40 yards past everybody, or even 25 yards past everybody, you're still going to be holding one club or two clubs, or sometimes three or four clubs less in your hand than the guy who's in the middle of the fairway. You know, great. Yeah, I got 290-yard drive. That's beautiful. You still might have a 6-iron in your hand, whereas guys like Brooks Koepka, who bomb it 30 yards past you, they're like, yeah, I may be in the rough up here, but not only am I 30 yards closer, but I'm also stronger than you, so it's not just a 3-club difference. I've actually still got a pitching wedge in my hand to get out of this rough, and you're back there with a 6-iron. So that's the difference. Length. All right. So call it broad shoulders. Call it whatever you want. It doesn't matter. It's long off the tee. That's number one. Now, they say that his short game, which is really what I was most impressed with and tend to be most impressed with these guys who can hit the ball a long way, and it was what impressed me about Jordan Spieth, it's what impressed me about Brooks Koepka, is the fact that their putting is still so solid. John Daly is another great example of a guy who hit the ball a long way, but soft hands around the green, decent putting stroke, nothing like we saw out of Jordan Spieth 4 years ago, and really not even like Brooks Koepka, who, as Phil Mickelson said, he's not a guy who hits it great and putts it just okay. He said he putts it great. It's actually Mickelson's former coach, Rick Smith, said this. He said he putts it great. I'd put him up there with Ricky Fowler as one of the best putters in the game. Okay, so he hits the ball a long way. Good short game. Good putter. Great putter, according to this one coach. You ask other players, not coaches or writers or analysts, other players, Justin Thomas, one of the guys we talked about, who you could look at as a peer of Brooks Koepka or somebody like him that came onto the scene and won a bunch. What's different about Brooks Koepka? He said it's the mental game. He doesn't care. What? Yeah, that's what he says. Justin Thomas, his quote-unquote not caring is a weapon. Don't let that fool you, though. He's a competitive SOB. Okay. Not caring is something that Brooks Koepka has talked about in a different, slightly different way. He said winning the majors, this is what Brooks Koepka said. He said winning the majors is actually easier because other guys care so much that they fold. They crack under the pressure. He said going out and just being better and beating a field of 100 guys week in and week out on the PGA Tour is hard enough. But you get down to a major, and you would think it would be harder. He said, no. He said, once you make the cut out of those 60, 70 guys who are left, he said, half of them are going to wilt under the pressure of winning the major because they want it so badly. They care about winning it so much. He said, I make myself not care. That cuts the field in half. Now I only got to beat about 30 guys. He truly looks at it as not a way of getting around the golf course or of, you know, it's not one man playing another man or one man playing the field. It's one man playing the course. No, not to Brooks Koepka. He goes, I got to beat these other guys. It's almost like a statistical, mathematical, you know, sabermetric type of approach to it. You got to beat these other guys. You got to beat the score that they're going to shoot. And he says it's easier in the majors because these other half of the field left after the cut are going to blow up. Or at least have enough hiccups because it's a major championship where you just don't have to beat that many guys. You don't have as many guys to beat. So that's where we stand with Brooks Koepka, a guy who's got the physical attributes. He's got the length off the tee. He's got the short game and seemingly has the right attitude. He's gotten to his fourth major championship. Or from his first to his fourth, I should say. Not just the fourth overall. But from the time it took him to win his first major to the time it took him to win his fourth major. You understand? Okay. The time between the first and the fourth major, faster than Jack Nicklaus or Tiger Woods. And Brian Wacker says that more majors will follow, no doubt. I think he's right. But I think if we can be reductive about a lot of things like we are in this game, when we're talking about the ratings for golf, and it depends on Tiger, talking about being good at golf and being long off the tee, fine. For me, it comes down to putting. Everything that you talk about with this guy, the broad shoulders, the length, the attitude, great. None of that necessarily has to change except for maybe some of the physical attributes as he gets older, and that won't be happening for a while, you know. I mean, Brooks Koepka is 29 years old right now, so he'll be able to stay in shape for a good long time and, you know, still have monumental length off the tee. It's the putting. The putting, to me, is what will differentiate as to whether or not he can continue at this pace, because we saw it with Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth used to be the guy who it wasn't the 4 and 5 footers that he needed to make in order to get a birdie or to save par. 8, 10, 12-foot putts were just automatic for that kid. It seemed like, especially in the year when he won the 2 majors and finished runner-up at the third. Those were the putts that he didn't miss. Seems like he didn't miss from inside of 12 feet, which is unthinkable. You think that PGA Tour players, you know, make all their putts from 10 feet. They don't. They really don't. If Brooks Koepka can continue putting like that, fine. If not, the wheels fall off, and that's where you start to get chinks in the armor in terms of your mental game. I'm still driving the ball. I'm averaging this driving distance of over 300 yards. I'm still I have this competitive advantage on the field from where I am on the course and what club I have in my hand on my approach shots. But if you don't make your putts, then it doesn't matter. And if he starts not making putts, then you start to see that house of mental cards begin to crumble. All right. As I said, we're going to visit with Ken Elworthy. He's the general manager at the Cape Club in Sharon. Find out what's going on over there. We will do all of that right after Mike O'Brien and the Hub headlines here this morning on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Sports Hub headlines.
In their series opener against Houston, the Red Sox almost erased a 4-0 deficit, but ultimately fell last night 4-3. Starter Chris Sale went 6 innings, allowing 3 hits, 4 runs, only 2 of those earned as the Sox defense committed 3 errors. Sale also struck out 5 and walked 2. Boston closed the gap on that 4-0 lead on a trio of solo homers as Christian Vasquez, Xander Bogaerts, and Jackie Bradley Jr. all went yard. Game 2 of the 3-game set tonight at 7:25. David Price on the mound for the Sox versus Brad Peacock. New England Revolution have points in back-to-back games and will try and make a 3-game streak when they host DC United tonight at 7:30 p.m. You can listen to that game right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Game 6 of the NBA's Eastern Conference Final tips off this evening in Toronto at 8:25 p.m. The Raptors with a 3-2 lead in the series over the Bucks and will be looking to close things out for their first ever trip to the final and a matchup against Golden State. In local college action, women's lacrosse, reigning women's player of the year Sam Apuzzo scored in double overtime against North Carolina to send Boston College to its third straight national championship game. The Eagles will face #1 seed Maryland tomorrow for the title. Also locally, in men's lacrosse, Division II, Merrimack College in the division title, rather the national championship game. They will face off tomorrow to get the title. One note from the NFL, veteran cornerback Adam Pac-Man Jones announced his retirement yesterday after a 12-year career. These Sports Hub headlines are brought to you by VA Healthcare. Get the healthcare you've earned and deserve. Call 844-VA-CARES or go to vacares.us. I'm Mike O'Brien and your boss home for sports, 985 The Sports Hub. Next update at 8 a.m.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
Welcome back to the Sports Hub Golf Club. I am at the Cape Club of Sharon, which might require some explanation, but I've got the best man to explain everything here. His name is Ken Elworthy. He is the general manager here at the Cape Club of Sharon. Ken, thank you for having me here today.
Thanks for having us, Hardy. Great to be here.
Well, it's good to be here for me because finally I decided to be a grown-up this year and actually join a club. And when I was looking around at different options, I said, the Cape Club of Sharon, where is that, on Cape Cod? What are you talking about? So just to let everybody know, we are sitting on what I will say used to be Spring Valley. But if you were ever at Spring Valley, I think the first thing I would say to you is you wouldn't recognize the place.
That would be correct. A lot of changes happened to Spring Valley when we took over the club back in 2016. We revamped the whole clubhouse. We've created a brand new grill room, excellent restaurant on property. We've done some enhancements to the golf course. We will be building some beautiful townhomes on the property as well. So a lot of construction going on, a lot of fun.
I was actually here for a wedding about 12 years ago, and unbeknownst to me, I'm talking to the person who got married here a few weeks back, and she said, you know, like, oh, how's your summer going? I'm like, oh, good. You know, we joined a club, the Cape Club of Sharon. She goes, oh, you were there for my wedding. I said, no, you didn't get married here. She said, yeah, we got married at Spring Valley. I literally didn't recognize the place from where I was here 12 years ago to a couple of weeks ago. So it's not just BS. You wouldn't recognize the place, number one. Number two, the Cape Club of Sharon, a little confusing, but you guys are using that name because there's also a Cape Club of Falmouth that you're associated with.
That's correct. What we're trying to do is actually build a Cape Club group. So we're even looking at current golf courses as we speak. We're trying to add 5 to 6 more clubs to our whole group of golf clubs so everyone who belongs to one club can play the other clubs. And we started in Falmouth, Mass. That's where the Cape Club became Cape Club. And then we picked up Spring Valley, and now we call it the Cape Club of Sharon.
Okay, so we are in a private golf course setting right now here at the Cape Club of Sharon. Cape Club of Falmouth, private, semi-private?
We like to call it semi-private. We do offer a year-long membership where it gives them full access to the golf course, including their carts. But we also allow the public to play Falmouth as well.
Okay, so the one thing I wanted to talk to you about here today, Ken, and by the way, this is Ken Elworthy. He's the general manager of the Cape Club of Sharon. You may remember it or know it as Spring Valley, but you wouldn't recognize it, number one. Number two, we're in Sharon, Mass. I want to say like 15 minutes from the city limits. I mean, if you go from Hyde Park, we are 15 minutes outside of Boston. It's really conveniently located. And the one thing I wanted to talk to you about today, Ken, is, you know, whether or not you play golf here, it's not necessarily if you're a member. I mean, you might be here as a guest or a part of an outing. But you guys have this beautiful facility now that is available for people to use for weddings, for other functions. Tell me a little bit about that, because I've seen one of the weddings taking place here. Unbelievable what you guys do here just for private functions for people who want to essentially utilize and, you know, for lack of a better word, rent out the club for the night.
Yeah, we had a lot of great amenities at the club. The best thing about the Cape Club of Sharon, you do not need to be sponsored by a member to hold an event here. So outside weddings, badmintons, bar mitzvahs, we allow everything on property. You got a book. We're pretty solid, filled up at this point. The events are really busy here, but we'd love to have as many events as we can. So we do have an open door policy to allow other events outside of non-members.
Is that the idea behind like the whole clubhouse renovation? And it's not just the inside. We've got this beautiful outdoor patio now with fire pits everywhere and outdoor seating. Is it a way to like say, hey, for the members, you've got this now too, but it also has to be in mind to like, hey, if you want to have an event here, I don't know that you're going to find a more beautiful spot.
It's definitely for both. So we obviously want to build really special experience for our outside guests to feel like they're actually members here as well when they are on property, as well as for our membership. We want them to feel like this is their second home. So they have a lot of different things to do here with the swimming pool, tennis, like you just mentioned, the beautiful patios, outdoor patios with the fire pits and music. And there's going to be outside TVs for people to watch. So we're still building onto what we've already done, but a lot of great amenities at the property.
The golf course itself is like a parkland-style golf course, and I've played it a few times now. What types of changes did you make to the golf course, and what types of changes are you going to continue making?
Well, we're looking at potentially enhancing all the bunkers to what we call an Augusta white sand, which is a really soft, powdery sand throughout the whole golf course. We're adding white stone cart paths over the next couple of years as well. To really kind of pop the green on the golf course. It gives it a really great look, almost a Cape Club look in Cape Cod. So it's a cool experience, and it's a great bunker system, a great product that we use. Currently, we already have it on the 18th hole here as kind of a demo hole for our members to actually see what we're heading to.
What makes this place different from other clubs in and around Boston?
I think we do have a great location. I believe we put a really fair value on our membership. We have a lot of different programs that allow younger adults and families to come into the program. We're trying to kind of build our foundation with a younger membership. It's very active, but it is a very limited membership. We only have 310 members here, so that allows, you know, access to the golf course all the time. And, you know, we just want to make sure that we allow everybody to be able to use the club where it's not, you know, you're not waiting for a tee time and different things like that. So I think the best value to this club is the access to the golf course all the time for our members. A lot of moms trying to get them involved with the ladies programs, playing golf and tennis. And so a lot of different things happening for the younger families here.
Well, we've been talking here on the show already with Stephen Daly, who is your head professional. And, you know, just from the people I've met around here, it really is a great staff. It's a great atmosphere. It's very loose, but it's that odd combination of being like a really nice place with a relaxed atmosphere.
Yeah, we're a very welcoming management team, and that's what we are. We're not caught up in titles. We really want to work as a team together. Every manager is very approachable for our members. We're always, you know, accepting any type of constructive criticism or compliments, and we'll take them all day long. And, you know, we're happy that the way the members respond to us, I think we've developed a really great trust and friendship with our members.
So for people who either want to know about membership or want to know about private events and hosting them here in Sharon, we're at the Cape Club of Sharon, which is really close to the city, and it's a really nice facility. Where do people go? Where do they get more information?
Well, you can go onto our website, which is www.thecapeclubofsharon.com, and you can check on member services, and you can almost get any response you need from that website.
And later on in the season, I would love to check out the Cape Club of Falmouth. You know, maybe run down there and see what that's all about. Do you know somebody down there? Maybe make a call for me?
I'm sure I can make one call. I'm not sure if your reputation is going to let you out there, but I think I can pull some strings and we can get down there and you can take a great look at that club too, because it's fantastic.
All right. Ken Elworthy, he's the general manager of the Cape Club of Sharon. Don't call it Spring Valley, because even though it's maybe on the same piece of property, you wouldn't recognize it. And it's just a fantastic place. So, Ken, thanks for the time here today, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
Thanks so much for talking to us. We greatly appreciate it.
Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Back to wrap things up here on the Sports Hub Golf Club. Ryan Johnston lurking about. He'll be taking over here in a couple of minutes and then lead me into the hockey show a little bit later. There's one more thing here on Brooks Koepka. Where a panel of experts, writers, analysts, golf announcers, they all got together and they talked about, you know, kind of did like a postmortem on the PGA Championship and talked mostly about Brooks Koepka. And, you know, Koepka said that, you know, he wants to win double digits majors. He wants to get at least to where Tiger is, 15. And, you know, people said, oh, yeah, he could win like 7, 8, you know, 12, whatever. It's if he stays healthy, blah, blah, blah. But I thought the most telling question and answer was when these group of, you know, golf commenters were asked, who or what will be Koepka's biggest hurdle this year, the next 5 years? And Bob Herrick, who's a guy who's been on this show before, a writer for ESPN, he said, the biggest hurdle for Koepka? Golf. The ultimate game of frustration. He said, somebody might be having a better streak than him, or maybe he blows a big chance. He said, nobody made an issue of it. But, again, another example of how soon we forget. Koepka had a great chance to win the Masters this year. He was one of the guys who, put a ball in the water on number 12 and then missed real makeable putts on 17 and 18. That putt that Koepka rolled on 18 that he needed to make in order that was going to, you know, put the pressure on Tiger to make a bogey just for the top. It didn't have a chance. It was, by some accounts, the worst putt that Koepka rolled all week. So before we anoint him and crown him the next biggest thing, and we've done this enough over the years, we've done this enough times to know that it doesn't happen overnight. We shouldn't do it. Even with the back-to-backs at the U.S. Open and the back-to-back PGA Championships for Brooks Koepka, just hold on a second, because it was only one major ago that he blew it. So keep that in mind as we try and determine how many majors Brooks Koepka is going to win. He's really, really good. He's best player out there right now. But you don't have to go that far back before you saw him blow a really, really big chance multiple times on the same nine in the same tournament. All right, Ryan Johnston, standing by. Ryan?
Hardy.
Are you ready to talk about the Bruins in the Stanley Cup Final for a second straight week?
I don't know. I'm feeling the Brooks Koepka thing this morning. So.
Wait a second. Now, I thought we had a really good Brooks Koepka chin wag here this morning on the show. So I don't know why you're throwing shade at me.
I'm not throwing shade at you at all. I'm throwing shade at Brooks Koepka. I just can't embrace this guy.
It was Maz and I were talking about it. He goes, "What do you know of Brooks Koepka?" I said, "Nothing." He's from Florida. He's a good college player. I don't know. He hits the ball a long way. I don't know.
I mean, just an absolute, like, mayonnaise sandwich on Wonder Bread. Like, there's just nothing to sink your teeth into with this guy. I mean, he's a hell of a golfer. Great. I mean, amazing job he did last week. But, I mean, people, I saw a few people trying to say, well, this is like, you know, early Tiger. He's dominating the field. It's like, no, it feels nothing like that.
Nope.
Nothing like that.
It does not. And he is less interesting to talk about than Jordan Spieth. And man, is that saying something.
Yeah.
I mean, there's at least.
Well, I find Jordan Spieth to be thoroughly unlikable. So at least that's something.
Right, right.
There's something I can get
there.
Behind my hatred of Jordan Spieth and root against him with all of my passion. With Brooks Koepka, I legitimately last weekend I was not interested at all.
Isn't that the worst? It's the apathy, the ambiguity. I just don't care. I have no idea. You know how he's going to continue. Like I said earlier, I think it's going to come down to putting, as it did. As Bob Herrick just reminded me on the 17th and 18th holes at the Masters, you know, great, hit the ball 350 yards. Awesome. Good for you. If you miss the putts, it doesn't matter. That's what gets inside a guy's kitchen. That's what messes with you more than anything in this game. You're a great striker of the ball. There was a player, and nobody remembers this guy. His name is Tom Pertzer. And I was told by the one golf job that I had in addition to this one when I was just working at a golf course. And the golf pro said, hey, go up to the Buick Open this weekend, and if you're going to follow anybody around, follow Tom Pertzer. Watch him hit the ball. I said, okay. And I watched this guy in the range, and he is amazing, right? He's just striking the ball. And I said to somebody with him, like, how come I never heard of this guy? And they said, oh, wait till we get out on the course. You'll see. I saw Tom Pertzer, one of the best ball strikers I've ever seen hit the ball. Other pros would stand around and just watch him hit balls on the range. That's how good he was. I saw him four putt from 20 feet.
Wow.
at not a difficult golf course, you know, at, you know, the wherever they played the Buick Open. I can't even remember. It was in Grand Blanc, Michigan. Warwick Hills, I think, was the name of the course. I mean, the guy could not putt, and he got much better as a Champions Tour player. But holy smokes, you want to talk about what will mess with a guy's head? It's putting. It's not even chipping. It's not even the short. You don't even narrow it down to one thing: putting.
You know,
that's what could be the undoing of him.
You know, the driving range, of course, can be very deceptive. I mean, as we all know. But my best driving range story, Hardy.
Yeah.
When I was in college and I was working as an intern at a TV station out in Chicago, and the Western Open at Cog Hill at that time. Came through, and we'd go out and cover. They'd send me out to cover it because I was a golf guy and not many people in the sports department were. So it's like, yeah, go out with the camera guy and get us some footage. And we went out, and Tiger Woods was playing in the Western Open as an amateur. And we interviewed his dad, and we were standing on the driving range. And Tiger, you know, at that point, you remember Tiger when he was like skinny, you know, gawky looking kid.
Oh, sure.
Is standing on the driving range, and at the far end of the driving range, 300 and who knows how many yards out, there was like a barn for like golf carts and things like that. And Tiger is hitting drive after drive, and they're going into the garage door of the barn, like one after another after you. Like if you took a machine out there, it wouldn't have been as accurate as this. Right. And it was after about the fifth or sixth one in a row that we're all kind of standing there looking at each other, like, is this serious?
Who is this kid?
Exactly. And you know, so this was. You know, he was still an amateur, so it wasn't, you know, the fanfare was building, but it wasn't like Tiger Mania quite yet.
Right.
But it was like, holy cow, there's no way that there's anybody out here that can do this.
Right. And but having said that, he wasn't quite ready. You think that's enough.
Exactly.
To be able to do that. Oh, no. You know, the game really begins like 50 yards and in for these guys. And, hey, being closer is better, but I guess part of me is just hoping there will be someone else that comes along and has a run like this, and that Tiger gets a couple more wins here and there to kind of keep things interesting for a bit. Because if there isn't any other indicator out there, look at the final round ratings for the PGA Championship this year, and that's all you need to look at. It was supposed to usher in this new era of golf's fourth major, and we're going to have it in May. It's going to be a Bethpage Black, and it was set up perfectly because Tiger had won the Masters, and you look at the numbers from that tournament. It did a 3.9 overnight rating, which was down 36% from last year.
I didn't even turn it on Sunday until, you know, maybe about the last hour. I just flipped it on to see if anybody had even started to challenge. So it was, you know, whether it would be worth my time. But I didn't even tune in.
No. And I watched it because I still enjoy it. And, I'm one of the guys who will still watch these things. And it did come down to a much better finish than I thought it would for a guy with a seven standing on the first tee box on Sunday with a 7-stroke lead to see that whittled down to one. It got interesting, but not interesting enough for the vast majority of the people watching. All right, Ryan, what are you doing? You're going to do a little something before you get into the hockey show proper here this morning?
No, we're going to do mostly hockey, although I do have a few thoughts about the Kyrie to L.A. rumors, so I'm just going to throw those in here. But we'll start getting ready for the hockey show, and I mean, it's only been, what, about 4 months since the last Bruins game, so we've got a lot to break down there.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping for a comprehensive breakdown of the St. Louis Blues, because we're back on Monday, on Memorial Day. We're live from the big fan fest going on. We're going to be right there on Canal Street near the Garden on the midday show from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Absolutely. Good to see all you highfalutin weekday guys working on the holiday, along with Flynn and I.
Hey, highfalutin, please. I work every day, you know that. But... I'm hoping to steal a bunch of your material for your breakdown of the Blues. So you will not have a more intent listener to your work today, Ryan, than this guy right here.
Excellent.
So I look forward to it. All right. Michael Bryan with the Hub headlines here. Thank you to Ken Elworthy, general manager at the Cape Club, and Sharon for being on the show today, and Mason Seuss, our producer. Ryan Johnston coming up next here on the Sports Yeah, we're going to rename the whole station. No, not on the Sports Hub Golf Club. That show's over. But Ryan Johnston's coming up next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.